As you look back over your past, what would you say are the most important decisions you have made that have impacted your life? I would imagine that decisions concerning your mate, your career, even where you live would rank high on that list. But I'd like to suggest another for your consideration this morning, and that is your choice of friends. Your choice of friends will have a significant impact on your life, positively or negatively. And the Bible reflects the importance of friendships in our lives. The words friend, friendly, friendship appear over 100 times in Scripture. And the book of Proverbs has a lot to say about friends. We see examples of friendship in both Old and New Testament. We see the negative as well as the positive impacts friends can have. And this morning I'd like to draw out three principles about friendship from the book of Proverbs that can give us very practical insight on this vital subject. We initially encounter the ingredients of friendship in the pages of Proverbs. And the first of those I'm calling affection. There must be genuine love between two people in order for friendship to exist. One of the better known verses in the book of Proverbs is Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A true friend, according to Scripture, is not a fair weather friend. They're not only around when things are going well, or when you have something that they might enjoy or can benefit from. A true friend loves at all times. Even, maybe I should say, especially in times of adversity. If you want to know who your true friends are, look to see who's there when times are tough. Look to see who's there when maybe you're not at your best. Those are your true friends. Friend loves at all times. So how can that be done? I mean, even the best of friends wound each other from time to time, sometimes unintentionally. Sometimes our sin nature rears its ugly head and our friends are the ones at the receiving end. How can we love at all times? Well, Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 12 tells us how that can be done. Hatred stirs up dissension, but love covers over all wrongs. For a friendship to last, there's going to have to be forgiveness. Because friends are people, and people are sinful, and even Christians still stumble and fall into sin from time to time. And we need to be able to forgive. I like what Warren Wiersbe says about this verse. Love doesn't condone sin. Love doesn't encourage sinners to hide their sins from the Lord. But love doesn't tell sin to others. Your true friend is not going to see when you stumble and fall and blab it all over social media or to their friends, even their church friends, so that we can pray more effectively. It's still gossip. And gossip ruins friendships. How much better it is to go to that person individually and talk to them, encourage them. As we'll see at times, we may need to even confront them if they're not aware of what they're doing. That's a hard thing to do, but a true friend will do that. Seen many a sign in many businesses, maybe restaurants or other places of business, and it says, if you don't like our service, tell us. If you like our service, tell everybody else. How often do we get that switched when it comes to friends? We don't like something, we tell everybody else. They're the last person to know. Happens a lot with preachers. Everyone else in the church hears about it. If they don't like something, I'm the last one to know. There's something you don't like that's going on in the church. You don't like something that I'm doing or not doing. Tell me. Don't tell everybody else. Be a friend. And that's how friendships survive. We don't gloat over another's failures. We don't spread them around. We deal with it privately, and then we move forward. Restoration is the goal of the true friend when another falls into sin. Another way of showing affection as friends is through acts of kindness. Proverbs 14:21 says, "He who despises his neighbor sins, but blessed is he who is kind to the needy." If you want to, again, know who your true friends are, wait until adversity strikes. See who shows up in times of trouble. Those who give kindness in times of need, especially when there's no guarantee of it ever being paid back. That's a true friend. That's the kind of friend you want to have. The bottom line of friendship is seen in Proverbs 18, although we have to kind of reverse it. It's kind of like looking at the negative of an old photo. You see the reverse in Proverbs 18:1. "An unfriendly man pursues selfish ends. He defies all sound judgment." If an unfriendly man pursues selfish ends, what does that say about a friendly man? A friendly person is going to be unselfish. And just as we saw the importance of unselfishness in the relationship between a husband and wife a couple of weeks ago, the same is true in friends. A true friendship is where one friend is concerned about the needs of the other, and the other is concerned about his friend's needs. And when that happens, both of their needs are met. But when you have any relationship where both go into it, say, "What can I get out of this?" in a selfish mentality, that relationship's not going to last. I guess you could kind of paraphrase President Kennedy's famous line, you know, "Ask not what your friends can do for you, ask what you can do for your friends." That's true in friendship. You know, there is no room for selfishness in that kind of relationship. So the first ingredient of friendship is affection, love, kindness, forgiveness, unselfishness. A second ingredient of friendship found in Proverbs is affirmation. Over in the 27th chapter of the book, Proverbs 27, verse 9. "Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of a friend's counsel springs from his," or I'm sorry, "the pleasantness of one's friend springs from his earnest counsel." A true friend affirms with godly advice, practical advice. They don't just stand by and watch their friend hurtle into destruction. This is where I said earlier, there are times when maybe an intervention is necessary. Because if you truly care about a friend, you don't want to see them ruin their lives. Or maybe they come to you for advice. They're not sure what they should do in a situation. Prayerfully consider. Ask God for wisdom so that you can help them in that way. We affirm them that way. In this same chapter, Proverbs 27, down in verse 17, "As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." This image is used of a tool that sharpens a blade. And sure, there's friction involved. It's not necessarily a pleasant experience, but in the end, the blade is sharper. It's more useful than it was before. And that's the kind of effect we should have on our friends. Affirmation may involve questioning. It may involve some constructive criticism. But the goal is always for their good. And for this to take place, you need tact on the one side, the person that's giving the advice, not to become detrimental. And you need humility on the other side, not to become defensive. Now while we're here, I'd just like to interject an important corollary. From time to time, we are all going to encounter criticism of some kind. It might be from someone very close to us. It might be from someone who hardly knows us at all. It might be delivered in kindness. It might be delivered unkindly. But how we respond to criticism will determine whether it is beneficial to us or not. And I would suggest the first task in responding to any kind of criticism is to distinguish the message from the messenger. Oftentimes, we are more or less willing to hear something depending on who's telling us. But we need to filter that out. Look at what's being said more than who is saying it. Because when we react to the messenger, we're more likely to respond emotionally. What we need to do is react rationally. So just separate what is said from who's saying it. Then you need to ask a couple of questions. First is this criticism true? Is what they're saying about me accurate? Oftentimes it's not. And if it's not accurate, let it go. Now, if it's someone that means something to you, you may want to take the time and the effort to correct their thinking. Let them know that maybe they'd been misinformed, maybe they misinterpreted something. If it's someone you barely know, you may decide it's not worth the effort. But don't let it bother you if it's not even true. Let it go. Now, sometimes criticism is accurate. If it is true, then I need to ask, is this something I need to change? Sometimes the answer is no. You can be criticized for doing the right thing. I think of the apostles in the book of Acts, when the Jewish leaders say, you need to quit preaching in this name of Jesus. Now, had they been preaching in the name of Jesus? Yes, they had. They're being told not to do so. What was their reaction? They said in Acts 5:29, we must obey God rather than men, meaning you. Yes, what they were saying was accurate, but it was not something they were about to change. Somebody might say to you, boy, you talk about Jesus a lot. Is that true? I hope so. Is that something you're to change? I hope not. So you may respond to criticism by saying, what you're saying is true, but I'm not changing it because I believe I'm doing the right thing. But there are going to be those times when somebody brings something to our attention, maybe we weren't aware of it. Maybe we weren't aware of how detrimental it was. They bring it to our attention. We have to honestly admit, you know what, they're right. And yeah, this is something I need to change. That's how we benefit. We're a better person because somebody pointed out something about us that we need to change. And again, don't get too caught up in who it is that's delivering the message. At one point in time, God spoke through a donkey. He can speak through anyone. Don't lose the message because of who the messenger is. Analyze it. Benefit from it. Let's get back to the ingredients of friendship. We've seen affection. We've seen affirmation. The third is allegiance. Perhaps you can relate to the words of Proverbs 20, verse 6. Proverbs 20 and verse 6. Many a man claims to have unfailing love, but a faithful man who can find? And all the women said, yeah, I knew that was coming. It's not easy to find a faithful friend, is it? I saw a picture not long ago, and it says, if you love someone, let them go. If you hate someone, let them go. Just let everybody go and get a dog. Don't we say dog is a man's best friend, right? Why is that? What is it about dogs that make them such a great friend? They are loyal. They are allegiant to us. Best definition that I found of allegiance is love that is loyal. If that's not a definition of a dog, I don't know what is. And that is what a friend ought to be, a love that is loyal. You need that allegiance, again, to go through the tough times. You know, too often Proverbs 18:24 rings true. A man of many companions may come to ruin. You might have all kinds of friends. You may have hundreds of friends on Facebook or some other social media. You may have all kinds of people that want to be your friend as long as things are going well, as long as they can benefit from you somehow. But when the tide turns, where are your friends then? Are they like Job's friends? You know when Job's friends were of the most comfort to him? First 7 days when they kept their mouths shut. Right? As soon as they open their mouth, look out. And that's the way a lot of friends are even today. You know, it's not bad enough that you're down and out. They're going to jump on top of you and stomp on you and a few other things. That's not the kind of friend that we need to have. We need one that's going to be loyal. The rest of that verse says, there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. And that's the kind of friend we need. Friend that's going to be there in the good times as well as the bad. Someone who is loyal. And remember this, if you can't find anyone on earth that fits this definition, has these ingredients of friendship, there is a friend that sticks closer to than a brother, and his name is Jesus. He wants to be your friend. He is the friend that loves at all times. He's the friend that is always there. A second truth emerging from the book of Proverbs is the influence of friendship. Proverbs 13:20 says, "He who walks with the wise will be wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm." This principle works both positively and negatively. See, friends in your life are not neutral. They have an impact one way or another. If your friends lead good lives, they encourage you to become a better person. But if they lead disreputable lives, they'll lead you down the same path, or even worse. So choose your friends carefully. You want to be wise? Choose wise friends, because they will have an influence on you. What constitutes a wise friend? We could spend all day on just that topic alone. But let me share with you a New Testament verse that I think should apply in our friendships, our relationships in life. It's 2 Timothy 2:2, a verse you've probably heard before in different settings. Paul says, "The things you've heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable men who will also be qualified to teach others." Paul talks about two different kinds of people in this verse that we always need in our lives. We always need somebody who is pouring into us, someone who is investing their time, their energy, sharing with us the truth they have learned. They are pouring into us. But then there is another kind of friend that we pour into them. We're able to share what we learn. We're sharing our journey with them. We need to have mentors in our lives, and we need to have those we mentor. I heard somebody once say, everybody needs a Barnabas and a Timothy in their life. Barnabas was Paul's mentor that brought him along and helped make Paul what he became. And Timothy was the one whom Paul poured his life into. Sometimes we get unbalanced. We have too many people that are pouring into our lives, and we're receiving all of this wisdom and knowledge and really good stuff, and it just stays with us. We need to have those to whom we are sharing these things that we are learning, that we are experiencing. Sometimes we have too many people that we're pouring into and we're not being refreshed. We're not being refilled. There needs to be a balance of that. We need to have those who are pouring into our lives, those that we are pouring out. And one thing that I have learned, if you really want to remember something, tell it to somebody else. When we pour into others, we are reminding ourselves of those truths, and they're going to stay with us better. So we need to have both kinds of friends. On the flip side, we need to beware of friends who will bring us down. We read earlier, a companion of fools suffers harm. And we've seen this all too well in lives played out around us. Paul warns us in 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrupts good morals. I remember in junior high or senior high school when we were a whole lot more agile, they would put somebody on top of a table and then somebody on the ground who is about the same height, about the same strength. And they'd say, okay, the one on the table, pull the one on the ground up. The one on the ground, pull the one on the table down. Who won every single time? The one on the ground. Even though they were of equal size and pretty close to equal strength, the one on the ground always won. Why? Gravity. There was another force pulling that person down off of the table. And you know, the same is true in the moral realm. There's a song lyric that goes, moral depravity pulls us like gravity. And that's true. Even for the Christian, we are still prone to sin, prone to wander. And when we're around people that are pulling us that way, not only are they pulling us, but our sin nature is pulling us, and it's very easy to pull us astray. When we surround ourselves with those who are pulling us in the right direction, it's much easier to go the right way. It's the influence of friendship. Chuck Swindoll gives this illustration. It's just always stuck in my mind. If you put on a pair of white gloves and go out and work in your garden, especially if it's just rained, your white gloves invariably will become muddy. He said, I've never seen glovey mud. It just doesn't happen. He's right. The mud is going to stick to the glove. The glove is never going to influence the mud. And that's the way we are. We've got to be careful how we are influenced by the friends we choose. Proverbs 12:26 warns, a righteous man is cautious in friendship. I like the way the New King James Version puts that. The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. Yeah, we've got to be careful about those who we allow very close in our lives, because they are going to influence us one way or another. Sin is contagious. An association with openly sinful, shameless people is morally and spiritually dangerous. Now, I'm not saying we should abandon Christians who slip into sin. We need to be their friends. We need to help pick them up, encourage them along the way. We're talking here about people who, that's their lifestyle. That's not the exception in their life, that's the rule. Paul refers to this in 1 Corinthians 5, verses 9 through 11. He says, I've written you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. Not at all meaning the people of the world who are immoral, or greedy, or swindlers, or idolaters. In that case, you'd have to leave the world. But I'm writing you that you must not associate with anyone who calls himself a brother and is immoral or greedy, an idolater or slanderer, a drunkard or a swindler. With such a man, don't even eat. What he's saying there is, there may be people who call themselves Christians, but if they don't live like it, they're going to pull you down instead of pull you up. Beware. Watch out. Even if they claim to know Christ, make sure that their actions back that up. We are called to relate to unbelievers around us to reach them for Christ, but be careful that they don't influence you and pull you the other way. Unfortunately, many Christians are so anxious to have friends. They want everybody to like them. And so they will allow people into their lives that bring them down. Remember, a man of many companions may come to ruin. It's not the number of friends that you have. It's how are your friends influencing you. The third truth Proverbs teaches is the indication of friendship. Our choice of friends reveals a lot about us, good or bad. George Washington is quoted as saying, "Associate yourself with men of good quality if you esteem your own reputation, for 'tis better to be alone than in bad company." Sounds like he's been reading Proverbs, doesn't it? You know, better to live on the corner of a roof than with a contentious spouse. Yeah, same idea here. So I don't want to be alone. Well, you're better off alone than you are with the wrong friends. I'll give a little social commentary here. You can agree or disagree. You've noticed how much violence there has been in our cities lately? I mean, you can't turn on the evening news without some shooting in Champaign or Decatur or Springfield. And sometimes you even find it in our smaller, more rural towns. But in those inner cities especially, what you're finding is an increase in gang activity. A lot of those shootings are gang-related, and a lot of the victims are getting younger and younger. And I believe that one of the big draws into gangs, they want to be accepted. These young people want to have friends. They want to have people that like them, that make them feel accepted and wanted. And if they get caught up into a gang, they end up in a life of violence and oftentimes ends at a young age. Or they spend their life in prison. All because of their choices of friends. And they want to be liked. They don't want to be lonely. I've known Christians. I don't want to be lonely. I don't want to live alone. I'm tired of being alone. And so they'll let people into their lives that are far from godly, and before long they're being pulled away from the Lord. Choices of our friends is very important, and the friends we have are an indication a lot about us. I heard this poem years ago. I want to be very, very clear. I did not write this poem, and this poem is not written about me. One night in late October, when I was far from sober, returning with my load with manly pride, my feet began to stutter, so I lay down in the gutter, and a pig came and laid at my side. A lady passing by was heard to say, "You can tell a man who boozes by the company he chooses," and the pig got up and walked away. Our friends are often an indication about the life we live. Proverbs 22:1 says, "A good name is more desirable than riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold." Now, we can put too much stock in our reputation, but maybe our testimony should be what's at stake here. And we want to represent Christ in a good way. And who we choose as our close friends will have an impact on our testimony. Earlier, we considered Proverbs 13:20, "He who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm." I'd like to go back to the very first chapter of Proverbs, from our very first message, where Solomon writes about the importance of our companions. Beginning in verse 10 of that first chapter, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, 'Come along with us, let's lie in wait for someone's blood. Let's waylay some poor harmless soul. Let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot with us and we will share a common purse.'" Sounds like an ad campaign for a gang, doesn't it? My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet rush into sin. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the lives who get it. We're seeing it played out in the streets of our cities all the time. And we've got to be careful as we choose our friends. And we need to be sharing this with our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids. Be careful who you run with. Be careful who you choose as your friends. They will have an impact on your life. It may end your life early, or it may ruin your life for years and years to come. And many reputations have been damaged by association, even if that person themselves didn't do anything wrong. Tammy and I know of someone that was part of a group, and one of that group took another person's life. It wasn't something planned. It wasn't something they talked about. It just happened. But everybody on the group did 10 years in prison. So that's not fair. That's the way it is. That's the way our law is written. And that's the impact friendships have on our lives. They can ruin our lives, or they can make it better. Our choice of friends is one of the most significant decisions we'll ever make. Friends play an essential role in our lives. They can either enhance or endanger our existence. We cannot deny the influence that friends have on us, nor the indication on our character that our friends make. Ultimately, we need to surround ourselves with people known for affection, affirmation, and allegiance, those ingredients of friendship. And of course, if you want to have a friend like that, you need to be a friend like that. If you want to attract people like that in your life, you need to be that kind of person. If you find that you don't have many friends and it just seems like you're all alone, you start being this kind of person and you will see the right kind of people come and you will have good quality friendship. And if all else fails, you turn to that friend who is closer than a brother. Jesus will always be with you. He will never leave you. He'll never forsake you. He is a friend like no other.